the Fan.
Look at you, hacker. A pathetic creature of meat and bone. Panting and sweating as you run through my corridors. How can you challenge a perfect, immortal machine?
Now, it's time for Video Games Weekly. Industry news, reviews, what's great, what's garbage, everything you need to know about video games. Now, along with Andy Reiner, here's the Fan's Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Video Games Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host, as always, Reiner from Game Informer and GameInformer.com. Hello.
Our listeners can't see this, Charch, but you are wearing the most amazing Snake Plissken t-shirt.
Thank you.
It's red with like a silhouette of Snake's head.
Yeah.
With the eye patch.
I
can't tell
shirt.
If that's Escape from New York or Escape from L.A.
No, it's Escape from New York. Escape from L.A. is garbage, honestly. It's
okay.
Escape from New York was awesome. Donald Pleasance, Adrian Barbeau.
Yeah.
So many great scenes and moments. And conceptually, what a great idea Escape from New York was.
Amazing.
And yeah.
All of
New York has been turned into a penal colony.
Yeah.
Yes.
Speaking of games, that's what they did in Arkham City. They turned all of Arkham into a prison.
Great point. Now, as a kid in high school, I had the Escape from New York board game, which I can't believe it. Like, and nobody's got that anymore. If I had only kept it, it wasn't a great game.
What is it worth? Is it rare?
I don't know. It might be now, but I don't even want to look it up because I had it and I didn't
keep
it.
I'm going to do it.
I'd love to know.
I want it too.
Escape from New York. Escape from New York board game. It came out shortly after the movie when the movie turned out to be a hit. And I think it was a TSR game, the same company that was doing Dungeons & Dragons at the time. But it was a board game.
This could be worse.
I know. I don't want to find out. It's worth a ton. And I, you know, at some point I threw it away, or more likely my mom threw it away in all probability.
Blame the mom.
Well, it's easy to blame the mom. In this case, my mom, God love her, she's somebody who has to clean. Anything that does not have a purpose must go.
Yes.
And so football cards, gone. You know, all my old vinyl, gone.
Oh.
And it all just got thrown away. You know, she got into one of her purges and just threw all that stuff away. Oh, God. My old vinyl. Oh, what'd I do to have that back? Reiner, The exciting release from today is Deathloop. You and I have been talking about this as one of our most anticipated games of the year, and it's finally here. It is a PS5 and PS4 and PC exclusive, which I guess means it's really just not on Xbox, really.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating premise, and I'm excited to break it down not only with you, but also with Blake Hester, making his debut on Video Games Weekly from Game Informer. Hi, Blake.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Nice to talk to you. You may be familiar with my co-host, Reiner.
No, I haven't heard of him, but I'm a frequent listener of the show.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And a good answer considering Reiner's your boss. That's an excellent, excellent answer. You did the review of Deathloop for Game Informer, and I want to give both you and our listeners, Blake, a little bit of background because, I think you and I are going to have a spirited debate on many parts of Deathloop. I was involved in a lengthy beta test of Deathloop in the spring, like roughly April, I want to say, maybe May. So recent enough that it was very close to final, but I will acknowledge that some things may have changed since I played it. And so I've got a fair amount of time into Deathloop and probably, you know, you obviously got all the way through it. So I'm looking forward to talking to you about it. Let's start here. Deathloop is the game from Arkane Studios. They are the makers of some of the best reviewed games of the past 10 years. The Dishonored series, Prey, which was horribly underappreciated.
Yeah.
And I think underreviewed. Tell people, Blake, let's start here. Just what kind of game is Deathloop?
Deathloop, keeping with Arkane's portfolio, is what is called an immersive sim, which is not the hottest genre around, But basically, it's where the systems react in natural ways to player input. So where you can imagine something like an Uncharted game is kind of like you are taking part in a play or a movie.
Yeah.
Deathloop is, or not Deathloop, an immersive sim, which Deathloop is supposed to kind of react how the real world would be to you. So you're kind of encouraged to push at the world and then adapt to how the world pushes back at you, and then use that experimentation and knowledge you build of that world to, you know, take on pretty standard video game objectives, which in Deathloop's case, like most video games, is kill people.
Well, yeah, or not. I mean, you know, stealth is a huge part of this game. Yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute, too.
Blake calls it immersive sim. I call the genre action.
It is.
And that's it.
It is a first-person shooter, and Deathloop is set in four different large areas of an island. And this is a totally unique game in many, many regards. Blake, tell people about sort of the core premise and what happens when you die in Deathloop.
Sure. In Deathloop, you play a guy named Colt Vaughn, who kind of wakes up in media res, as it were, being murdered. That's how the game opens. So, sorry, spoiler for the first 1 second of the game. But shortly after, you know, he's killed, he wakes up on a beach, which is a startling thing if you think you are passing beyond the mortal coil. He wakes up, realizes, I am not dead. And then through, you know, a few different plot beats later, you learn you are actually trapped in a time loop. This one day on the island called Black Reef is repeating, and every time you die, you will be sent to the beginning of the day. And that's the same for basically the entire island. Anyone on there is repeating the same day over and over ad nauseum because of some science mumbo jumbo that I didn't fully understand. Yeah. That's like the core conceit, and then the gameplay kind of operates around like a Groundhog Day style twist.
Yeah, so you're going to, every time you die, the whole day resets and you're back at 8 in the morning. It's the morning on this island, and whatever of the four sections of the island you decide that you want to play in first. And when you die, you restart again. And repetition, Blake, is a huge, huge part of Deathloop. And this is what I think is going to be a sticking point for many people, that when you restart the same morning in the same section, it's fundamentally exactly like the last time you played it. Talk to me about the repetition part of this game and whether or not that was a hurdle for you.
It wasn't. And because Deathloop does something, I think, to compare it to another very recent time loop game, 12 Minutes does not do. Deathloop actually allows you to, I mean, obviously, as the player, if you play a time loop game, you are carrying knowledge with you of how the loop works. But in the game, Colt is able to maintain his knowledge of the loop and the puzzle, as it were. But it also does this smart thing where there's a currency system that allows you to bring your weapons and your gear with you throughout the game. Maybe not everything, because it is a finite resource. But because of systems like that, the repetition doesn't bother me, because it almost makes it feel a little more like a straight path or a linear path than it actually is, because I'm building upon each run with like tangible and evident growth, like, oh, I have this new gun. So yeah, I'm repeating the day, but I've never played this cycle with this gun before. How will that change, you know, my route through the morning? Or I have this new power that I think is going to be very beneficial for the evening. And kind of building that knowledge set alleviates a lot of the repetition that I think, like, again, a game like 12 Minutes has, where you're basically starting from scratch every single time. Deathloop kind of doesn't have as much start from zero as most time loop games tend to.
I've got two things to add to that. I can't remember a game that put more of an emphasis on my learning than Deathloop. Now, in a lot of games, your character learns new skills, new traits, new abilities, whatever. You, the player, there is a mandate that you, the player, figure out the world around you and explore it and find the ways to defeat and the, you know, the pathways to make things best over and over and trial and error, trying different things. You need to be ready to work in Deathloop because that game demands your attention and your thought and a huge chunk of your brain. You can't just go in guns blazing and think you're going to come out of Deathloop with an experience that you're going to enjoy. I think it demands a lot from the player to pay attention and learn the world around you as you play through Deathloop.
Charge.
Yeah, I think it also does a good job of like rewarding you as you get better. Like if you take the time to learn its systems, you are rewarded very well. And so, you know, when I first started the game, a level that took me an hour, now that I've played through the campaign, I can get through some of those levels in like 5 minutes. So that like that learning curve plus how it rewards you for like dealing with it is really interesting to me.
I got to use my brain on this one.
Yes.
Charge, I can't even get home from the radio station without putting in the GPS. I rely on my games to tell me where to go.
And you get none of that. You get none of that in Deathloop. They want you. They drop you into this game with like nothing. And they expect you to learn the map, find the secret passageways, learn where the defenses are the weakest. And it takes just sheer repetition. And another area, Blake, that I think is going to be a frustration point for people is this. And you alluded to this. As time goes on, you gain better weapons that you get to keep and new skills, effectively magic, that you can use to help you along the way. And you gain a double jump right off the bat, and you can double jump up and get to places you couldn't go before. When you start this game, the game's never harder than the first time you turn it on. You have the crappiest weapons, you have no skills or ability, and then every time you play it, it resets to the exact same state, but the longer you play it, the easier it gets because now you have all these things. There are going to be people that are going to tap out of Deathloop in the first like 5 hours because it's hard, or at least I found it to be very hard. Blake, did you see it that way?
I think I agree with you for the most part. It is hard. I think in terms of Arkane's games, specifically the Dishonored series, which this seems to take almost blatant inspiration from, it's actually a little easier than some of Arkane's other games, but I don't think if you didn't like Dishonored or Prey or what Arkane makes, I don't think this is going to be the game that sells you because like there is a very difficult learning curve to any immersive sim type game. I think if you're already kind of like embedded in that genre, you might find it a little easier, but yeah.
We're talking about Deathloop with Blake Hester from Game Informer magazine and GameInformer.com. Deathloop is primarily a stealth game, especially early, because your weapons are so feeble, and the way that the system works is if you attract too much attention to yourself, the game basically just pours guys onto you. And it just, you know, like if I shoot a guy in a leg and then he makes a bunch of noise and I shoot him in the other leg and he's still alive. And now all of a sudden I got like 9 guys on me. I got a huge problem. The game really wants you to be headshots. They want you to be silent and to move very quietly. For me, especially through the first half, until I've got some really good weapons that can let me clear a lot of guys fast, I found it to be almost entirely a stealth game.
Why are you aiming for the leg and then the other leg?
I'm not trying. It's just where the shot goes. So I'm not very good. Blake, what do you think about that?
I play almost any game I can stealthily if given the option. I find the puzzle of that more satisfying. I think Deathloop, the further you get, does a good job of making guns blazing a viable option. But when you start out, like you said, no, that's probably the worst possible way you could attempt to engage with the game.
They really do punish you for being caught. You know, if a camera catches you, guys, your guards catch you, they just swarm you on guys. And then that's pretty much the end of your run, or you're just, you know, running for your life. And that part I didn't particularly care for. So I mentioned there's 4 independent parts of the island on Deathloop, and you visit them at four different times of day. So this is not really like an open world game. It's got a large, the four maps are pretty large for all of them. But what they do to sort of break it up a little bit is for the four independent parts of the day, when you visit them at the four different times of the day, they've all changed. And I'll give you a couple of examples. When the tide is high, you can see that there's like a cave on the beach, but I can't get to it because if you touch any water in this game, you die. So I can't get to the cave. But I come back later in the day, tide's down, now I can get in there. And so some parts of the map change and provide new ways to experience the game over time. Maybe like in an evening run, you will find a code word that is a password to a locked door that you need in the morning. But, you know, because you're you, you can remember that, and then you can use the code word the next time you restart a morning run. Does that all sound right, Blake?
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think of the 60s influenced styling of the game?
I thought it was cool. I think the 60s chic doesn't do a lot for me personally, but Arkane has a proven knack for great world design, and especially compared to a lot of their other worlds, which are very dour and depressing. It was mm-hmm. kind of welcome to be, I enjoyed being in a more upbeat and funny, albeit violent and nihilistic world.
Well put. I think I can say this without being too much of a spoiler. To beat the game requires, it's hard. I found it to be very hard to get to a point where you can pull off what it needs you to pull off in one day. I found Blake to be very challenging. Were you ultimately challenged by this game, and especially to try to get to the ultimate end game scenario on it?
I was. I took my time, and I feel like by the time I got to the final mission, I was pretty competent at the game and felt really comfortable going into that final objective, and then almost instantly botched it, and it was just a nightmare, which is more operator error, I think, than anything else. But I think it's like a good challenge. It's a game that will reward your patience if you can meet it in the middle.
Tell Reiner a little bit how they use the multiplayer in this game. It's fairly unique.
Yeah, so it's Colt is kind of constantly being pursued by this other character named Juliana, who the idea is, you know, she relishes killing you, and there's a specific reason why, but I won't spoil it here. But she tells you, because you effectively cannot die, you will always come back the next day, I will continuously hunt you down and murder you. And if you do nothing, the AI will do that. So it'll be a computer character that comes in. But that's actually how they create the multiplayer in the game, is other players can play as Juliana, and they can infiltrate your game and hunt you down. And the game, it's really fascinating. It doesn't tell either player where each other are. You just know that someone's in your game. And then it's up to either the Juliana character to find you on their own, using, you know, sight and sound, I guess, or the Colt character to find Juliana or evade Juliana, which creates this like really tense cat and mouse game that's very, very cool. I'm actually not sure if I'd recommend keeping it on for an entire playthrough, because it can be a little frustrating to have someone ruin your run, but it is like a neat concept, and I enjoy playing around with it.
Yeah, that's cool that you can turn it off, though, if you don't want those invasions happening.
Yeah, there's three options. You can have it be AI, anyone random player around the world, or friends only. So you can like set up matchmaking with just a friend, which is how we did it in the review process.
And Blake, what score did you give this game?
I gave it a 9 out of 10, which on the Game Informer scale is, I believe, amazing.
Yeah, that's an A-minus,
right? Yeah. An academic scale. Yep. It's an A-. That's a strong review.
What about you, Charge? If you could go back in time and score your play test. Obviously, the game's still in development at that point.
Yeah, at that point, it still had about 3 months to cook. And but I think that was so close to final. My grade would have been more like a B minus because I think I hadn't had a very. I think the tuning wasn't right, and it was very, very hard at that time, and the learning curve was too hard. But it sounds like, based on the reviews I've read, including Blake's, that it's much more approachable now than it used to be. And it might have been something that they learned from testers like me that really struggled to get over the hump. It took me 10, 12 hours of just grinding to get like my second and third weapons and my second and third skills before the game started to really fall into place for me. And I could have a much more enjoyable time with it.
But both of those scores and everything you've said, everyone, you know, both of you have said is play this game. You know, it's different.
Deathloop is really unique. Yeah. And I love that part. And we were talking about the multiplayer a minute ago. The fact that you can just be playing, you're going through your single player campaign and then in comes Juliana out of nowhere and she's hunting you. And you're like, no, I'm right in the middle trying to do this thing. And all of a sudden I got Juliana on my ass. But obviously you've signed up for it, but it's pretty fun. You don't know when it's coming. It can be any time. You're at really bad times where you're in the middle of some spot where you really don't want to have to deal with that. And then here it comes. It's a cool premise. Deathloop's gotten some 10 out of 10 reviews.
Yeah, IGN and GameSpot. Yeah.
10 out of 10. And then other reviews that of people who hated it.
Yeah. Maybe got stuck on that grind or
stuck on the grind, like the repetition. The repetition's going to get to people. I think this more than most games, you have to know who you are as a player. If you are a run and gun, bullets flying, fast paced, thoughtless kind of first person shooter player, this Deathloop's not the game for you. Blake, you agree with that?
I think so. Yeah, I'd agree.
I mean, it is a slow-paced, thoughtful game that requires a lot of attention and a lot of your personal learning as you go through the way Deathloop ends up working. So, yeah, it's a fascinating game, super polarizing, and I think for the right audience, people are going to love it. They'll be campaigning for it to be Game of the Year in December, Reiner, and there's going to be a whole other subset of people that can't stand Deathloop.
It's the year of the loop, right? We got Returnal.
Yeah.
And then 12 Minutes, as Blake brought up.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, The Forgotten City, one of my favorite games this year.
Yeah.
Is also the same concept of just reliving the same days, but trying to find your path through it.
Hey, Blake, thanks for your help. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
Yep. And congratulations on your Video Games Weekly debut. Hopefully we'll have you on again in the future.
Appreciate it. Take care.
Sounds great. Reiner, we're overdue for a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the database leak that appears to confirm the existence of a lot of rumored forthcoming titles. I want to talk to you a little bit about that and some of the titles that sounds very legitimate, or else I wouldn't bother to bring it up, and get some of your thoughts on some of the games that may be coming our way sooner than later. This may force some announcements sooner than planned as well. We'll talk about that when we come back to Welcome back, Video Games Weekly on The Fan. Paul Charchian with you. My co-host is Reiner from Game Informer and GameInformer.com. Reiner, I normally do not bring up, like, just rumors on the show. Because,
yeah.
Sometimes they put you in a difficult position because a lot of times you know if they're true or not, but you can't necessarily say.
Mm-hmm.
And also because just basic journalism ethics. You just need to be really careful about just spreading internet rumors. But a couple of days ago, somebody was able to basically hack into NVIDIA's GeForce database and confirmed a lot of games that were believed to be coming, but hadn't yet been announced. And normally, again, I wouldn't give this any thought. But if you go back to the original posts on this, the guy who hacked it all out went screen by screen and explained exactly what he did on every screen to unearth this data through their system. And it looks and sounds very legit. And frankly, the list of games are extremely plausible. Now, there's like 20 games here. I don't know. I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on all 20 games. And I'm not specifically asking you to confirm or deny.
Okay.
I want to just pretend they're all coming.
Sure.
Okay. All 20 of these are legitimately coming. NVIDIA just issued a generic statement, by the way, in response to this, saying some of the games may have just been placeholder names and may not, you know, but they didn't deny anything outright. So I'm going to give you the name of one by one. I'll give you the name of the game. You give me, assuming it's real, give me your interest in this game and just one or two quick top of mind thoughts.
Do you want to do the academic scale like you did with your B minus for Deathloop?
Yeah, okay. Let's do that. Academic scale. All right, first, Chrono Cross Remastered.
So this isn't Chrono Trigger. This is the sequel that not many people played on PlayStation. I love that game.
Did you? Okay.
Remaster is not remake.
No.
So this is the same game, just kind of brought forward.
It'll have
some quality of life stuff. I'm going to go B. Solid B.
All right. I would go C. Final Fantasy Tactics Remastered.
One of my favorite PlayStation games ever.
I agree. I loved it when it came out. But back then, right.
But a remaster could really change that. I'm going to go B+. I would love to play that again.
I'd really want to see it not pixelated. I'd like to see it in state-of-the-art graphics. If the remasters is changed enough, I would go A-. Final Fantasy IX Remake. Remake, not remaster. This would be a ground
up. This is like Final Fantasy VII. Okay, so let's go. Well, I love 9, so I'm going to go A on that. I would love to see that.
Yeah, totally remastered.
Modernized? Wow.
Yeah, remade. Kingdom Hearts 4.
Well, seeing I didn't finish 3, because my daughter did not like the story.
Wow. She's
like, this makes no sense. And I was we agree.
You've offended the sensibilities of an 8-year-old. Okay.
I mean, a lot of people would be excited. For me personally, I would go C+.
D. Just,
I'm curious. Oh, wow, chart.
Resident Evil 4 remake. Now, Resident Evil 4 was a stone cold classic when it came out on the GameCube, 15 years ago. This is a remake. What do you think?
One of the best games I've ever played that I reviewed. I remember playing it with coworkers. They had copies as well. Mm-hmm. Nobody stopped playing until late into the night. We came in the next morning, just, you know, bloodshot eyes, but raving, you know, like maniacs. It's like, this game is amazing. I'm going to go A+. I would play that
A+.
Again.
I went back and about a year ago, I looked at some videos of the gameplay of Resident Evil 4. It's, by today's standards, it is slow, and I don't know how well it's going to hold up that much later.
Now, it says remake, not just remaster.
Yep, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Street Fighter 6.
C+. I like my fighting games, so I just don't play them much anymore.
All right, again, we're going through the NVIDIA GeForce database leak. Assuming these are all coming, whether or, you know, the degree to which you would be excited if it's true. Dragon's Dogma 2.
A+.
The first one, very underrated.
So good. Nobody played it.
Yeah.
Clever. You're climbing around on monsters. Open world adventure with a party. It was fantastic.
Monster Hunter 6, which there was no doubt it was going to come. It's just, you know.
Yeah. A-. I like those games. They're great co-op games.
You love those. Yeah. Grand Theft Auto Remastered.
So now this is, we think, Vice City, San Andreas.
That's right. That's the current belief is that that's what it is.
Or is it just
the PS2 era games?
Okay. Remastered. Well, Rockstar has billions of dollars. They could do that in a great way. Let's say A, straight A.
I feel like they're not different enough from the ones that have come out recently. I don't think I'd play them. I would go C. Maybe a D. BioShock 2022.
F. Nobody wants that.
Can I go A++?
Sure. I will go. I'm going to give you A+, just my enthusiasm because I love that series. Mm-hmm. But then I realized Ken Levine might not be involved at all.
Yeah. Well, no, he's not involved at all.
I'm going to go B+. I'm going to put it in the BioShock 2 range.
Yeah. Well, and BioShock 2 was pretty good without Ken Levine.
Pretty good. I agree.
Mirror's Edge Remastered. This would be the original Mirror's Edge.
Yeah. See. Yeah.
Titanfall 3.
A straight A.
Yeah. How? And give credit to, I guess not just Respawn, but the gaming community in general. Titanfall 2 was awesome.
Yeah.
It launched head to head with Battlefield and Call of Duty and got squashed at release, but it's so good that it's more vibrant now than it was whatever 4 years ago when it launched.
Yeah. People are like, one of the best campaigns ever in FPS history is Titanfall 2.
Yeah.
And that word of, you know, that kind of word of mouth alone was like reason for people to go back and play it. And once it hit PC, people went bonkers on that.
Yeah.
Or when it was re-released on Steam, when it got onto Steam.
Tekken 8.
Again, fighting games.
Fighting games are not my deal.
See.
Yeah. All right. The Talos Principle 2.
See.
Yeah, puzzle games.
Puzzle first person adventure.
Here's my beef with all puzzle games. You get to a point where you're stuck, and now you're stuck. You have just a linear path. There's no way to go around the puzzles usually. That's just too many puzzle games require you to get every puzzle in sequence. I must do A, then I must do B, then I must do C, then I must do E. And if you ever just get jammed on G, you're stuck. Talos Principle had some of that in it.
Yeah.
The first one. Crisis 4. What's your level of excitement for that?
That's the first-person shooter game that leans heavily on a bow and arrow. And your guy's like a sci-fi alien dude running around with a bow and arrow.
No problem with that?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to go C+. It's weird. Church.
Batman Arkham Knight Remastered.
Knight. So just the third game.
Yeah. Odd. It's only the third game's only like 5 years old.
Yeah. I'm going to go
D. I wouldn't play it.
I mean, I like
how
Batman,
much different can it be?
I don't know. Give me all of them.
XCOM 3.
Ooh. Well, see, the team that's doing, you know, that does the XCOM series is doing Marvel's Midnight Suns.
Right. We're more interested in that, honestly.
Yeah. So I'll just go B-. That's a great series, but. Yeah, I don't know about that.
It is a great series, and having played both of XCOM 1 and 2 extensively, they both got to a point of a lot of micromanagement, and it became really hard, really hard. And all these guys who I'd been leveling up, they all die. They're all dying, and now I'm bringing in all these rookies, and the game's way too hard and got out of bounds for me, so I don't like it. Injustice 3.
A. And here's the thing. I just talked bad mouth fighting games.
Yeah, right.
NetherRealm, what they do is makes very strong campaigns, story-driven campaigns, what they did with the DC Universe. Mm-hmm. This is where Superman goes crazy and starts, you know, all the heroes have to take down Superman. That's kind of the setup. Love that series. I would love a sequel.
Destroy All Humans 3. First two didn't.
Yeah, see.
Sniper Elite 5. There are people who love that, who've loved that series.
Not me.
Okay.
I mean, I know they're super popular and well done, but yeah, that's not my jam. Probably a B-.
Cities Skylines 2.
B-.
I don't know where they go from here. The Cities Skylines, the first one was great.
Yeah.
I don't know where you go from there to make it more than it already is. It's got like 100,000 pieces of DLC in Cities Skylines 2. Fight for Middle Earth. I don't know what that even means.
I don't either.
All right. I mean, obviously it's a Hobbit thing, but I don't know what that Hobbit thing would be.
You go to Hobbit instead of Lord of the Rings.
I do. Mortal Kombat 12.
Again, Fighter. A. Yeah. That's story driven. NetherRealm. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. I love that series.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 Remastered. Although it says in parentheses here, recently debunked by Activision, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Well, if it were true.
Activision says it's not real.
The premise this whole bit is this, these are all true.
Okay. B-.
Last one, Helldivers 2. I don't remember Helldivers 1. Was it a flying game?
No, it was was it a twin stick shooter?
I don't remember. All right, so we don't care.
Why did you save that for last?
That's just where it was in the list. When we come back, Ryder's going to talk about a game he's been playing and texting me about throughout the course of the week called Tales of Arise. In all the time we've done this show, I've never heard you care at all about a JRPG until now. We've found one that's captivated you. We'll explain why Tales of Arise should be on your radar.
Skyuma!
Welcome back, Video Games Weekly on the Fan. Paul Charchi and Reiner with you. Reiner, you've been playing a game called Tales of Arise, which I had heard of. I'd seen a few people posting about it on Twitter.
Yes.
But I look at it and go, okay, it's got all the JRPG trappings to it, and I was shocked that you're playing it and loving it, because that's not a genre that I've ever hear you talk about. What makes Tales of Arise a particularly good JRPG?
Well, one of my favorite JRPGs ever is Tales of Vesperia.
Oh,
which
yeah.
came out on Xbox 360.
Right.
There's a lot of Tales of games, but that was the one that really resonated with me. The leads from that game, some of the leads, are on Tales of Arise.
Okay.
This is the first entry on next-gen consoles, and it feels like the next big step in evolution for this series. Like, they've took some chances, tried some new things, really kind of elevated their game. Kind of like we've seen, you know, go back to Elder Scrolls.
Yeah.
Morrowind to Oblivion, or even Oblivion to Skyrim. You know, you saw that just seismic change in quality.
Yeah.
Same thing with, like, Witcher 2 to 3. I feel like we're seeing that here with Tales of Arise. Like, they really kind of turned it up a notch, and it is so much fun, beautiful, smooth, and really hones in on the characters. And one of the things that makes the Tales of series so special, and this is throughout the whole series, and they do it again here in this new entry, Tales of Arise, is it's about character bonding. So you'll have these moments where you're running through the world, and then you can hit RB. This is optional. But it'll bring up, like, it'll say something like about the characters want to talk to each other. And you hit that, and you'll get a very short kind of play, like a little skit of just them talking to each other. And it could be a bunch of characters. It's not just two of them.
Okay.
But it could be a bunch of them. And you just really get to know these, you know, your party really well, all of them. And you feel like a really, not only are they bonding together, but you're bonding with them as well. And you really kind of want to see them succeed in what they're doing. Combat.
Yeah, talk to me about combat in Tales of Arise.
It's just fast-paced. I love
that. It's not turn-based?
No.
Okay.
Fast-paced, on the fly, action. You got all these different special attacks. You got the evasive roll where you're taking, you know, advantage of iframes, all that, you know, perfect roll, dodge, all that stuff. And balanced really nice. Great rewards for leveling up and, you know, like a skill tree and all that stuff. My favorite part is whenever you use a special attack, they call out what that special attack is called. Just screaming it, you know, just at the enemy, like
screaming eagle.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
that's,
that kind of thing.
That's exactly what they do every time they do it. So if you have like three characters on the battlefield, they're all screaming their attacks. It's wonderful.
Now, you're only controlling one character at a time,
right?
I assume, but you can flip between the characters and take control of anyone that you want.
So,
right?
Yeah, you're mostly playing as the lead. And here's the setup is, the first character you come across that becomes a part of your party is this woman who, if anyone touches her skin, this is very much like X-Men or something like that, right? She has this electrical charge and they get fried or, you know, injured bad or die.
Yeah.
Your character feels no pain.
Ah, perfect.
So there's
I'm the Deadpool of this game. Okay.
So there's just something there. And he wields the sword that's made of fire, which is burning his skin the entire time.
Yeah.
She can heal that. So you have this yin and yang of these characters that are obviously made for each other. And you see that relationship develop right out of the gates. They get that, you know, establish that beat and it just goes places. And I'm not done with it yet, but I'm loving every second of it. And it feels like if you played games on PlayStation 1 or, you know, RPGs, it feels like that. But with all of the modern trappings, the quality of life improvements you'd want. And if you like those JRPGs, this is the one to get. Tales of Arise really is a nice evolution. I know people will say Final Fantasy is the best JRPG series yet.
Ah.
I feel like Final Fantasy VII Remake doesn't really embrace a lot of what came before, you know, like those JRPGs. It's the same characters, same universe, but it really tries something different. This game kind of embraces all those awesome elements from the RPGs of old. And I think Jason, our reviewer, ended up giving it a 9.25 out of 10.
And you're about right on that. Okay. Tales of Arise is out for the PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, the Xbox Series X, Xbox Series One, or Xbox One, and the PC as well.
Yeah.
Thank you for the lowdown on that. Darkest Dungeon 2 got dated. It's coming pretty soon. October 26th. We knew it was in the works for quite a while. Darkest Dungeon 1 was fantastic in so many ways. Yeah. Like the best voiceover narration that we've maybe ever had in a game. Really cool gameplay that that was turn-based, that ended up having, it was turn-based yet sort of linear, and it had all of this, you had to keep your party from going insane. But the thing that I think people remember the most is the soul-crushing difficulty of Darkest Dungeon 1. You'd put all this time into your guys, and you're trying so hard just to keep them sane and alive, and every time you do a run into the dungeons of Darkest Dungeon, you know, you come back tattered, worn, you know, half insane, and you try to get your party back up again, and you go down again, and they just get murdered, and now you got to start all over again. And I ended up buying Darkest Dungeon on three different platforms because I loved the game and kept thinking, this time I'm going to put together like the killer party, and we're going to have a lot of success, and it's going to work. I could never get by the difficulty curve on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a challenging game, and
to say the least.
I'm glad they're making a sequel. It was incredibly popular, the first Darkest Dungeon. And hopefully they can, you know, you had some frustrations. Hopefully they can deal with some of that stuff in the sequel.
I hope they do. Now, my worry is that Darkest Dungeon sold great. It got reviewed well. It was so brutally hard that my worry is that they're like, well, apparently there's this audience for brutally hard games, and that's what we need to continue to make Darkest Dungeon 2 be so hard that we reduce grown men to tears, because that's what got them paid the first time. But that's not what I want. I want Darkest Dungeon 2 to be, give me a little bit more of a level playing field. Give me a better chance to succeed. Let me bond with the characters that I'm building up and taking into these dungeons, and that they're not just fodder. And, you know, I hope they get it right.
Yeah, I just want a brighter dungeon.
Well, that would be okay, too.
That was a bad joke. I'll turn off my mic. Brighter
dungeon. Darkest Dungeon, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next PlayStation 5 firmware update is going to allow users to upgrade their internal SSD drive.
What could go wrong?
Well, my feeling is if you decide to take this on yourself, it's on you. No, if you're gonna crack the case on your PS5 and you're gonna go upgrade your drive, that's on you at that point, in my opinion. Now they're making it so you can do it, and this is a shift. Remember the old days? If you cracked your console, you voided the warranty, and that was it.
Yeah, that was before the days of YouTube, where you had those handy videos.
Yes,
that show you how to do it or change a light socket.
So now, remember, the PS5 ships with an 825 gigabyte SSD, which by today's standards is already pretty small. And actually, by the time you take it out of the box, your PS5 out of the box, you're already down to 667 gigabytes. Then you run the firmware update, and it's less than that. Now, you can buy a 2 terabyte SSD for about $170, and you triple your available space.
Not a bad deal.
It's not a bad deal.
Yeah.
You know, I love that console manufacturers are letting me tinker with the console. That's all I want to do. And what? It doesn't hurt Sony.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt them at all.
It's a nice way to upgrade without having to buy a whole new console.
Exactly. I like that Sony's letting us do that. And we're getting more of that kind of stuff in our consoles. Make them user upgradable.
Yeah.
Great job today, Reiner.
Hey, thank you.
Brett, thanks for all your help as well. If you missed any part of Video Games Weekly, we encourage you to check out the podcast, also available on KFAN.com. Talk to you in a week, everybody. Bye-bye.